Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're talking about a 2003 Western directed by none other than Kevin Costner.
Mm-hmm.
This will almost complete the trilogy. We will have done two of his three, right? Has he only directed three movies?
Yeah, but then he's making that movie Horizon, which is
like
four
multiple
movies.
Yeah, right.
And supposedly the first one might get released in 2023. He said, I read in Wikipedia that he wants to premiere it at Venice.
I love this plan.
And they're already working on the second one.
I love this plan.
And the cast is like right up our alleys.
Okay.
Because it's like Costner, Sam Worthington, Will Patton, Giovanni Ribisi's in there. I mean, there's a lot
it's just
of people.
Postman plus Jake Sully.
Sienna Miller is like supposed to be in a bunch of. Dale Dickey from Waffle Street. I don't know if this is true. This is just me speculating from something I read, but I heard that. Basically, Costner, this is a passion project of his that he's wanted to do since, like, Dances with Wolves. And he was going to maybe do it after Open Range with Disney, and it didn't work out. What I heard was he only did Yellowstone as long as he had to raise all the money he would need to make Horizon, which
Amazing.
Is the movie that he's doing.
Yeah.
And once he had all the money that he needed to self-finance as much as he needed to, he was like, all right, I'm out of here. Because it always struck me as odd that he was in Yellowstone. And I've never seen Yellowstone.
I've never seen it either. And I hear good things.
I've heard good things about like the earlier parts of it. I think it might be one of those series that kind of gets long in the tooth. But like, it's crazy to me that like he's in it and Cole Hauser's in it, and
right?
I'm just, like,
and you're not watching.
No, not really. And I like Taylor Sheridan stuff for the most part, even though he's a creep. But
I heard he's a horrible person recently.
I think one of the stories is that Costner was basically like, I don't need this Taylor Sheridan guy anymore. And I'm like, this is Kevin Costner saying this. I'm like, Kevin Reynolds is like, hello, not you. I see you. If you watch that show, leave a comment. Let me know if I should watch it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We're talking about Open Range.
Yeah.
I'm joined by Adam Risky. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I'm glad that we're getting this in for its 20th anniversary.
Right.
Otherwise, it would have stuck in my craw.
This is, not to open with depressing biographical information, the last movie I ever saw with my dad.
I remember you telling me that at some point. Yeah.
And then he went home, and Erica and I went in to see Freddy versus Jason.
This is a good weekend. Yeah. Not for you personally. But,
well, sure.
Yeah.
But,
Did you know at the time that was going to be the last time you see a movie? Okay.
No.
All right.
Oh, well.
How was your... So, did you see Freddy versus Jason on opening day?
Yeah, I saw both of them the opening Friday.
Okay, I saw Open Range opening weekend, but on a Sunday.
Okay.
And I saw it at, like, my neighborhood theater, which you know about.
Yeah.
And that was the go-to theater for, like, the dad movie.
Okay.
So, like, Seabiscuit played there for, like, 11 months. And, like, I saw that there. I saw Pirates of the Caribbean there.
Okay.
I saw Open Range there. But I couldn't see a movie like Freddy versus Jason. I saw the Nightmare on Elm Street remake there. That was fine. But, like, I didn't see Freddy versus Jason. But I saw Freddy versus Jason first show on the Friday it opened.
Yeah.
At Streets.
Okay.
And it was 10 a.m., and it was packed
with kidding.
Horror nerds.
That's amazing.
And it was like going to an arena concert. And it was even though that movie's not great, I'll always think that it's better than it is because of that experience.
Totally
understood.
It was
so much fun.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm jealous of that because I saw it at probably like 3 p.m. after Open Range.
Yeah.
And the audience was dead.
Oh, okay.
That's literally, they were just corpses because Freddy and Jason had murdered them.
They took out a lot of folk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we probably talked about this on the Freddy versus Jason show.
But which,
like,
we did. Which go we back did. And listen.
Yeah. That. So Freddy won?
Well.
Because he's decapitated, but then he winks.
I wouldn't say he wins, though. He's just not dead.
Yeah.
Jason is still upright and walking and more than just a head.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like a clear, decisive victory for Jason. But I'm
right.
Like, he winked, though.
Yeah.
And it's just
yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Does the top fall? Maybe.
That just shows me that, like, Freddy's eyeball is more captivating than the whole of Jason, where I'm just like, it counts. Like, I'm so desperate for it to be a win.
I still haven't watched the Robert Englund documentary, but I need to.
It's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like one of the best movies of the year or anything, sure. But I have one of those to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get into exciting. It. Yeah. Have you seen anything good lately?
I have. Yeah. So I'll get into the new stuff I've seen first. So this morning I started, because it's July, second half of the year.
Oh my God.
I'm just like, every Saturday until I'm caught up, I'm going to watch a movie that I kind of wanted to see but didn't get around to from the first half of the year.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to do one every Saturday. So I've got the next three lined up, including the one I watched today.
Okay.
So the one I watched today was Sanctuary with Margaret Qualley and Christopher
Abbott. Oh, yeah.
And I think it played at the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
It did.
I'm glad I saw it at home. No offense. I just feel like there would have been an overreaction. Because sometimes it happens at the Music Box. And especially at festivals. I thought that it was good.
Okay.
I actually kind of really enjoyed it.
Okay.
It was very surprising in kind of how it plays out. I think Margaret Qualley is like sensational in it, and it kind of proved to me that it's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Not that it was, I thought it was a fluke, but it's like this confirms, like, she's an actor that I want to see pretty much in any movie now. And she's in something that like one of the Coen brothers directed, and I want to see that a lot. And then Christopher Abbott's one of my least favorite actors, but he's fine in this.
Okay.
So that was good. The movie's surprisingly romantic at times.
I like that.
It has what I think is the best final scene of the year so far.
Interesting.
It was weird because I watched the movie at 6 a.m.
Oh, my God.
Because I get up super early for work. And not that I work today, but like it's just hardwired in me to get up. Sure. When I hear the rooster crow.
You got to get rid of that rooster, by the way.
Well, it's Miles Teller, so. And it's just Miles Teller running into my bedroom holding
Adam,
up a
wake up.
He's like, wake up, we're going to watch the crow. And I'm like, the rooster crow. Caw, caw, bang, fuck,
get a job with me and Anna Kendrick.
Alison Brie's in that, and you still haven't seen it? What's the matter with you?
Come on, man.
Come on, get a job. So it was weird because as I was watching the movie, I had to pause it at one point because I was like, wait a minute, my friend in high school, was I in love with her? And I didn't realize that until I was 41 years old.
OMG.
It was weird. It drudged up something.
Okay.
Because there was a girl that I was friends with in high school and college and a little bit into like my early 20s. And then she moved to KC, and that was the only reason why we weren't friends anymore. We're still friends, but like we're Facebook friends now.
Right.
But she used to call me Armando Riscato.
Yeah.
And nobody else could call me that except for her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And anytime I was wearing a hat, she would take it and she would never give it back. And that was kind of our dynamic. And then like I figured that out and I'm like, I got to stop wearing hats around her.
Right.
And then she seemed disappointed one day that I didn't wear a hat. And then after that, I was kind of like, as you wish. And I didn't realize that that's what I was doing. And I remember she came over to like my house one time and she went into like my room and she's just like, would just take a hat. Like she would just help herself. And I was kind of like, this is as close to like a dominatrix I ever had. And I'm into it. And like, maybe I was in love with her all along.
Okay.
So.
And this movie
brought that
illuminated
out.
That.
It illuminated
okay. Wow.
That. But I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a sentiment that I brought up at the end of the Masters of the Universe show.
Good journey.
It's not a good journey, but there's a sentiment that I brought up about kind of like where I'm at in my life right now in terms of my interests and what I like.
Yeah.
And the movie kind of has that a little bit as its thesis.
Interesting.
And it just kind of hit me at the right time.
Okay.
And I would say it's probably in my top five right now for the year.
Amazing.
So I really enjoyed it.
I really need to watch it.
Yeah. And it's like $6.
Yeah. I saw that. And I told Erica, I was like, it played at the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which perked her interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, it's a relationship movie about two people talking, and that's literally her favorite genre. So she
It's basically really just the two of them the whole time. Yeah. And it's kind of like Secretary a bit.
Okay.
But I think it's better than Secretary.
Okay.
And then the next two I've got lined up for next Saturday and the one after is Somewhere in Queens, the Ray Romano movie.
Okay. I don't even know that one.
And The Irishman made me like a Ray Romano fan. Right. So I'm just like, I kind of have to see that. Okay. And then I've heard good things about Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yeah. That's supposed to be really good.
Which I normally wouldn't want to watch, but it's Rachel McAdams and Kathy Bates, and they're two of my faves. So, like, I was like, okay, I got to
Were you an Edge of 17 fan?
I saw it once, and I didn't dislike it, but it didn't connect with me right away. But it was, like, one of those movies where I'm like, if I watch it again, I'd probably really like it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, right on.
And then another new one, I watched No Hard Feelings.
Oh, yes. I need to see this, too. God damn it.
And it's funny.
Okay.
And it's sweet.
Okay.
And it's pretty fun.
All right.
It's a bit of a wobbly chair leg as a movie, but Jennifer Lawrence is great.
Yeah, that's why I want to see it. I mean,
and it makes you almost mad that she wasn't doing comedies for 10 years.
Right.
Because this is the best I think she's been, or the most natural use of her star power since Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay.
Because I just don't think like... There's nothing wrong with her performances, but it's just like Passengers doesn't take advantage of what's special about her, or Red Sparrow, or The Hunger Games, or anything like that.
Right.
And then she was in this weird period where Hollywood, even though she was like 22, like was casting her in roles that were suited for like a 40-year-old woman, like an American Hustle and Joy stuff. Yeah. And I'm just like, what are you doing?
Is it Hollywood or is it one specific dude?
Probably one specific dude. In this one, she's, you know, her real life age is 32. She's playing a 32-year-old, and you're just like, yeah, this is
convincing.
Like what I've been waiting for 10 years. So I liked it. There's, some really funny bits, like in the beginning, in the middle, the lead playing the guy, he kind of has like a bit of an LCJ vibe, like in look, but he doesn't act that way.
Okay.
Thankfully he's really funny too. The two of them together.
At any point,
good.
Does she give him Chef on DVD?
No.
Okay.
No, I wish. No DVDs are exchanged.
Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. Kids these days. It's all on their tablets. All these digital codes and shit. Streaming. Oh, my God. There's a scene where there's two date scenes where they're like at restaurants or bars. And both of them are just like, one of them is really funny.
Okay.
And then one of them, there's like a part where somebody kind of like plays a song and it's a person reacting to the song.
Okay.
And I'm just like, this is one of the best scenes I've seen in a movie all year.
Oh, wow.
And then the movie does not sustain that at all. Mm. But it's so good that like it leaves you thinking like that was a better movie than it probably was. So I was a fan of it.
It's
good.
Super high on my list of stuff to go see. I have two movies I still need to see in theaters, and that's one of them.
What's the other one?
Asteroid City.
Okay.
I know you didn't love Asteroid City.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah, but I still... Erica really wants to see it.
Yeah.
It's a little like homework for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I used to... The idea of like not totally wanting to see a new Wes Anderson movie is very foreign to like 2005 Patrick.
Okay.
But here we are.
Yeah, I've really liked a lot of his later career stuff.
Okay.
I was looking forward to this. It's just, for me, and I didn't see it under, like, the optimal conditions because I was in a theater with, like, really loud speakers to the point where it was, like, making it hard to understand what they were saying.
Yeah.
But I had an issue with this one where it was, like, I understood what people were doing, but I didn't understand why they were doing any of what they were doing.
Okay.
And I've seen enough Wes Anderson movies where I know that he's not trying to obscure what he's trying to like,
right,
to say.
Got it.
So not that anybody's wrong in their opinions, but when I'm hearing like all these takes where it's just like about, oof, it hit me so hard and stuff like that, I'm just like, for me, this is like one of the first times where I'm like, I don't think that he's getting across what he's trying to get across.
Okay.
Like, I think that he knows what's going on in his head, but I don't think he dramatized it in a way that I can understand it. So
I know it's coming to digital in like 10 days, but we still want to see it in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks great. Cause you know, it's Wes Anderson.
Right. Exactly.
And then I watched two 2003s.
Gearing up for Open Range?
Gearing up. I watched Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Of course you did.
For the first time since opening night.
Nice.
And weirdly enough, I had sex the night that I saw Charlie's Angels Full Throttle and didn't like it. And then...
The movie or the...
No. And then cut to when I watched it this year.
Yeah.
I didn't have sex and I loved it. So if you're going to rewatch it, don't have sex.
Got it.
That day.
Got it.
And I don't know what it was, but like the first time I saw Charlie's Angels 1 in a theater in 2000, I was like, this is one of the most fun movies I've ever seen in my
life. Totally. Yeah.
And then every time since then, with the exception of when I rewatched it for its 20th anniversary 3 years ago, I was like, eh, it's a one and done. But the last time I watched it, I liked it.
Okay.
And then this time when I watched it, I was like, this is as close as I've felt about this series since opening night of the first one.
Interesting.
So I don't know what it is. I think maybe just because it took me aback where, and maybe it's just kind of like I love movie stars type thing.
Sure.
But I'm just like, Cameron Diaz is so nailing this.
Yeah.
And like Lucy Liu's never been, with the exception of maybe Kill Bill Volume 1, like never been more fun than this. And Drew Barrymore is just like so in the pocket in the early 2000s and late 90s and stuff. So I don't know. I liked it. I'm also like at the point now where, you know, back then I was just like, oh, Demi Moore has been. And now I'm just kind of like, she's luminous. I'm like, she's my age and luminous. So yeah, I dug it. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I saw the original, liked it a lot in 2000, had the exact same experience. Saw Full Throttle opening day, was like, what is this bullshit? Like, yeah. And I don't know why, because it's tonally, everything about it is basically the same as the first movie, right?
Pretty much.
For some reason, yeah. And I had to see it twice that weekend because then my dad's wife... Oh, maybe that was the last movie I saw with my dad. Anyway, I don't know. But she wanted to see it for her birthday. So we ended up, Erica and I ended up seeing it twice in the span of 3 days. And we were like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Full Throttle. Not a fan. And I haven't revisited it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was just like there's too many movies of its ilk, like with the bullet timey stuff.
Maybe.
By 2003, it was like, all right, enough of this shit.
Maybe.
Already.
I don't know. I'm sure if I watched it now, again, just because of where movies are at, I would be like, well, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the one thing I texted you was, I was just like, this, all the needle drops and cameos, right. I was like, oh, God, I'm so tired of this in 03. Now I'm just like, oh, I remember that. That's cool. I remember Fatboy Slim. So it's... it's like, I remember Prodigy. And then I rewatched League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
Which I saw opening night, and I thought it was god-awful. And I watched it again, and I thought it was god-awful. I felt, even though he was a real brat, to be kind, on set, I felt bad for Sean Connery the entire time because I'm just like, this movie is not of your caliber. Like,
right.
What are you doing in here? Apparently, they paid him so much that they couldn't hire any other like high-tier actors.
Got it.
So there's way too many scenes where I'm sitting there. I'm just like, why is he having so many two-handers with Shane West? And I don't mind Shane West, but like when you put him in a movie like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen,
right,
where he's not playing off of Ben Foster or like James Franco,
right,
and it's on Sean Connery, you're just like, this is a mismatch of all time. And I mentioned it on reserve seating, like there's so many scenes where they're just all standing together, yeah, and it's like meet the new boss and
right,
stuff, and I'm
right,
just like,
right,
you guys are such fucking assholes. Like it's very Van Helsingly.
Yeah, I could
see
that.
There's like Mr. Hyde,
right,
stuff. Richard Roxburgh is the villain. And let me tell you, that guy is like, was like a predictor of COVID, but it's like for your movie. It's like, oh no, we got Roxburgh. I'm going to quarantine for 10 days. And it's like, it's not, this is toast, but we're going to get through this.
I know there's people that love his Dracula.
Why?
In Van Helsing. Because everybody loves something, but I'm not a Richard Roxburgh fan.
No, I mean, hope that he's a great guy, and I feel bad. Like, I'm strictly talking about, like, how he comes across on screen in these two movies, because they're so similar.
Yeah.
And just, like, you are really going for it, and this is really not working. So that one wasn't necessarily a surprise.
Okay.
But
it's the movie that made Stephen Norrington quit movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yeah. I was reading the trivia, and... like, him and Connery at a certain point, like, just were fighting about everything just because they didn't like each other.
Okay.
So there was a scene where, like, the League has to walk down a street, and Connery was, like, giving Norrington shit about that, and Steve Norrington was just like, it's like, I don't know, we paid you $17 million, I think you could walk down a fucking street once, and then, like, so I forgot who was reporting it. It might have been, like, Jason Fleming, they were asking. And he's just like, what his reply was is unprintable in a family newspaper and stuff. And it was stuff like, they had like the cast rap party, and somebody asked where Steve Norrington was, or somebody asked Sean Connery if where Steve Norrington was. And he said, did you check the local asylum and stuff like that? And it's just like, wow.
I came to a realization a few days ago that I'm not really a Sean Connery guy. Like,
interesting. Did you watch Crusade? Or
yeah.
Something? Okay.
Yeah. Like, I like him just fine. He's not a turn off to me the way that like a Richard Roxburgh might be.
Yeah.
I like.
So wait. Sean Connery is better than Richard Roxburgh.
You heard it here, everyone. Okay. I like his Bond movies, most of them. You know, and when he's in something, I will usually enjoy his performance. But he's not a guy that whose movies I will seek out because he's in them.
Yeah.
Like, I've had years to see Just Cause, and I never have.
Not missing anything.
The Russia House.
I didn't see that
Never
one.
Seen it.
No.
I'm sure there's others.
There's a bunch that I haven't seen. Like, I have a 3-movie set of Family Business, First Night, and Robin and Marian. Haven't seen any of them.
I've seen 2 of those 3.
Okay. Which ones?
I have not seen Robin and Marian.
How are the other 2?
I probably haven't seen it since the 90s, but I would call myself a first night apologist.
Okay.
I don't remember Family Business at all.
Yeah. So I remember seeing the poster for that when I was like 7.
Yeah.
And I'm like Broderick. My dad's Hoffman. My grandpa's Connery. We should go see Family Business.
Perfect.
Didn't happen.
I like the Presidio.
I like the Presidio.
Connery's in that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good Meg Ryan in that movie, too.
Of course.
Yeah. I like how she just like... is like turned up and attacking like Mark Harmon, and Mark Harmon's just like, I don't know, you're gonna wrinkle my polo shirt.
I'm trying to be a movie star here.
I
got a small window.
Don't worry, he's making
huge he's fine
money.
I know. Mark Harmon is doing okay.
One movie I'm gonna have to rewatch this year because it's an 03 is Freaky Friday, and I remember being so thrown off that Mark Harmon and Jamie Lee Curtis had the same haircut and yet we're getting married. And that happens sometimes, like, with couples where it's just, like, they just start looking like each other.
Right.
And I'm just like, you're not even married yet, and you're already looking like each other.
I have never seen that Freaky Friday.
It's very good.
Yeah.
I don't know if it holds up, but in 03 it was like, wow, this is way better than it has any right to be.
Okay.
And then I wrapped up Junesploitation yesterday with Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. Because I was on a high... on Superman 3 and Taking of Beverly Hills, so I needed another Sidney J. Fury movie.
Sure.
And let me tell you, I really had a good time with Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. I understand that people don't like it, but you know what? I like my comic book movies to be kiddie books, not like parables about our modern society. Right. I don't care about that shit anymore. Like, I just wanted to be as dumb and silly as possible. Well, and Superman 3 and 4 hit the spot. So I don't know. I've seen Superman 4 twice. I've seen Superman 3 twice in one weekend during F This Movie Fest. I've never seen Superman 2 because I can never keep in my head if I should be watching Richard Lester or Richard Donner cut.
Richard Donner cut, I've never made it all the way through, but it's kind of not a movie.
Okay, so watch the theatrical.
Correct.
One. Okay, and then Superman 78, I need to go back and watch, but I remember having the same reaction as I did with like Star Trek The Motion Picture, where I was just like, this is a little too heavy-handed for me.
Okay.
But I'm so in the bag right now, though, for like Christopher Reeve in a way that I've never been before.
Was it The Flash?
Oh, my God. No, I need to watch Supergirl because, like, I've never seen that.
I don't remember it well. It was, like, streaming on Tubi. I don't know if it still is, but it was
on. I just
keep
watching the clip from The Flash, and I'm just like, who is she?
Who is that?
Who is that? And then I watched Babe Pig in the City today because they had a 35mm weekend matinee at the Music Box, and I hadn't seen that in a long time. And it puts modern kids' movies to shame. It's so ambitious compared to, like, what they're doing now. I don't think it entirely works because it's sort of like a WTF version of the original Babe. And there's a lot of, like, animal peril in it, which is a little queasy for me. But Babe is, like, one of my favorite movie characters. I just like so much, like, kind of what he represents. And... I don't know. I just, like, have a soft spot for that franchise, and a little bit of it is because it's, like, one of Gene Siskel's last favorite movies and stuff like that. So I always attribute that movie to him, and it was fun. My crowd was a little weird. There was, like, a couple that were basically making out during it, like, in front of us. There were...
Pigs get them horny.
There was, like... It was quiet for almost the whole movie, but then, like, 10 minutes left in the movie, somebody in the back just says really loud, like pets, dogs, and monkeys. And I was just like, did I hear that right? And to be honest, like, I've been on some medication lately, so maybe I hallucinated it, but I was just like, pets, dogs, and monkeys? What the fuck?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Music Box got a Music Box.
It does. Okay, correct my memory because you know this shit better than I do. Did that come out the same weekend as Bug's Life and Very Bad Things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanksgiving weekend.
I saw those two and never saw Babe Pig in the City.
I think part of the reason why I was a huge fan of the first one, but I didn't see Babe Pig in the City for... Well, one, I think they just waited too long because they waited 3 years. And I get these movies take a long time to make.
Well, you got to teach the animals to talk.
You do. And you have to move them all to the city. And you have to build the city. That's an amalgam of every city. When I saw Babe, it was like right at the line of like, I could get my friends to go with me to got see it. Babe. And then when I saw Babe Pig in the City came out, I was like in my sophomore or junior year of college. I was in my junior year of high school. And I was just like, I'm not even daring asking that question. I will wait. So I think that was part of it. And then also, like, as you mentioned, stupid to release it the same weekend as Bug's Life.
Right.
It was, like, same month as, like, the Rugrats movie, too, which was, like, a big hit. So it's just, like, it was crowded. You can't do that.
Crowded field.
I'll Be Home for Christmas open that
month.
Oh,
my gosh.
The JTT crowd.
JTT and Beale?
So good.
Never seen it.
I only want to watch it with you.
Okay.
I will watch it by myself because it's like every year I do that. But like I do want to have a day where just like the box set of the shitty Christmas movies and I just like make you watch them with
Let's do it.
Yeah.
What the hell was I going to say about Babe Pig in the City? It's gone now.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Sorry about
that. It's amazing to me that Universal has not like pillaged that property and done like 8 straight to DVD kids movies. Like,
yeah, they'll just
the technology has gotten easier.
Yeah, they just churn out like Land Before Times
and American Pies. Yeah. And there's Mean Girls sequels. I mean, there's like well, that's Paramount, but they sequelize everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they left Babe alone. Maybe it was
contractual
that they couldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. Speaking of like kids movies like that.
Yeah.
There's that theater in Highland Park that like kind of went with their own like sort of unique theme of like feel good movies.
Yeah.
But sometimes they play like rep stuff. I've never been back there since they've done this, but I'm always fascinated because like they'll show like coming soon of like what the rep stuff is. And, like, Father's Day weekend, they had, like, Mrs. Doubtfire and Father of the Bride 91. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I kind of want to go. And then, like, this weekend they have Forrest Gump. And I'm like, I kind of want to go. But then the thing I'm holding out for is it says coming soon. It doesn't say what day yet. It says Fievel Goes West is going to play during that week. And what? I'm just like, I will fucking go see Unicorn screening Fievel Goes West. That's one thing I love about like Chicago rep right now.
Yeah.
There's fucking Unicorn screenings
it
happening.
It is up. The Wild West right
There's
now.
There's Free Willy.
When is that's
Alamo.
Coming up, right?
That's on the 14th.
Okay.
I bought a ticket to Movie Party Good Burger on August 30th. And I'm just like, I'm going to get swag from Good Burger.
I haven't seen Good Burger since opening weekend either.
Oh, man, that's an outlaw.
And I
classic.
Didn't appreciate it, I'm sure, at the time because I was there to watch it semi-ironically because I was writing a paper about it.
Yeah.
I bet if I watched it now, I would like it a lot more.
It has one of the funniest jokes I've heard in a 90s movie.
I feel like you've told me the joke, but please do repeat the joke.
There's this long scene on a rooftop where Kel Mitchell and Kenan Thompson are talking to each other, and Kenan Thompson's talking about his father who, like, left the family, and it's, like, really played straight, and he's doing this story about a yo-yo, and he's like, it's the only thing that my dad ever gave me and stuff, and he's just like, now I can't even remember what my dad looks like. And then Kel Mitchell goes, I can't remember what my dad looks like either, but at least I got to see him every day. And, like, that's the button on the scene. And it's just like, oh, my God, that was funny.
And now that director, like, runs Paramount, right?
Yeah.
That's wild.
The only thing that's going to suck about that is, like, the guy who runs Good Burger was the guy behind Nickelodeon who did
Dan
all
Schneider,
the shitty
right?
Dan Schneider who yeah. did all the horrible stuff with the child actors
and has
stuff.
Still faced no repercussions.
Yeah, it's I mean he's been canceled, but that's about it.
Right.
Yeah.
He's still going to be set for life.
Yeah. Fievel didn't do any of that shit.
No.
You can still believe in old Fievel.
I don't have much to talk about because, again, I've this is my third podcast this week, and we've talked a lot about Junesploitation. Mm. Should we talk about our 80s comedy double feature that we did?
I would love to.
We watched. I talked about it a little bit on the Patreon show if you listened.
That was fun.
That just came out yesterday when we're recording this.
I need to read JB's.
He calls it the worst movie he's ever seen.
I don't agree with that. I'm not a Jerry Lewis guy, and I think John's a way bigger Jerry Lewis guy than I am.
Seems like it.
But, I mean, I said it to you after the movie was over. I was like, this is the first 2 a.m. movie where, like, you feel like you're dreaming it and you shouldn't be watching this.
So the movie is Cracking Up from 1983, a.k.a. Smorgasbord, which makes sense if you see the movie.
Yeah.
But also, I guess it's an appropriate title because the whole thing is just a collection of sketches and
yeah.
little skits that barely form a narrative.
Yeah, it's like Kentucky Fried Movie, but like the thread is that Jerry Lewis is multiple
everyone.
Characters.
Yeah,
and
right.
Yeah.
And I knew going into it that it was going to be kind of a disaster because it's Jerry Lewis directing a movie in 1983. It's like 75 minutes, which is always the sign that like, oh, this has been cut to ribbons.
Yeah.
It basically received no theatrical release, so there's a lot of red flags surrounding Cracking Up. But I don't know, we were laughing pretty early on and like not at everything, but we laughed enough to justify the 75 minute runtime.
Weird thing to say, I kind of want to watch it again because I was not with it for a while.
Sure.
But when it got to the scene with the waitress,
I just like the last scene in the movie.
It broke me. And it was the Wet Hot American Summer thing
right.
where I just needed the one joke and yeah. then everything else became funny after that. Even the stuff that I didn't think was funny before in hindsight became funny again. So I do need to see that.
All right.
Again.
I support this. And then we watched Joysticks, which had you ever seen Joysticks?
No.
Okay.
I think it was one of those movies I knew of from like 80s all over.
Got it.
But I never saw it. Yeah.
I'm guessing they were not fans of Joysticks on 80s all over.
They were hard on 80s teen sex comedies. They would say, like, if you watch them back, like Revenge of the Nerds and things like
yeah.
that there was, like, sex crimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, I didn't see any sex crimes in this one that I can remember.
Not quite. Well, when, what was his name? Dorfler?
Dorfus?
No. Dorfus?
Dorfman? Dorfler?
Shit, I can't remember. He gets into bed with Jodan Baker's wife at one point.
Oh, yeah, sex crime. I take it back.
Yeah. He's like hiding in the back. Whatever. It's basically a sex crime.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Joysticks?
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
It definitely was a movie that played by its own rules. It followed its own compass. I can respect that. It was so stupid.
It's so stupid.
It was kind of like a grandma's boy situation, but like didn't know that it was funny.
Right.
It was interesting.
I mean, it opens with, you know, this.
Yeah.
The nerd named Eugene, mm-hmm. like trying to have sex in the middle of an intersection with two girls in a car.
Yeah. I mean, this is the last year. It helped a lot, like with Six Pack and The Last Unicorn. And I had never seen Conan the Barbarian before. Right. I think that probably works on its own.
Yeah.
But like this year, like Hercules, Joysticks, Cracking Up, House on Sorority Row, yeah. Curtains. Like so many, like we watch them together bumps.
Right.
Where
right,
like
right.
if I watched those on my own, I don't know what I would think of them. But like being able to watch it with you and Erica and Rosalie and stuff like that, like just it's the way to do it. It was really fun.
Yeah. Those were fun. Yeah. Fun screenings.
Yeah.
The only other movie I'll talk about, because I know you saw it too, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yeah. What did you think?
I thought it was okay.
Same here.
All right, let's move on.
Capital letters, I had mixed feelings.
I rewatched Last Crusade and Raiders leading up to this. I didn't need to rewatch Temple of Doom because I've seen it recently.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to rewatch Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't totally love Last Crusade. Like, I think it's like a 3-star movie, mm-hmm. which is fine. That's, you know, good. I like it better than Dial of Destiny. But I was like, oh, if I only really like 2 out of 5 of these movies, am I not an Indiana Jones guy?
No, I think the way to answer that is if you're still excited about the prospect of that movie series continuing. Like, because I like maybe 3 of the 6 Scream movies.
Okay.
And I'm still would consider myself a Scream guy.
Okay.
So, because like every time a new one comes out, I'm just like, yay, Scream.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a good metric, but it's like weird to think about it that way.
Yeah. I can understand that.
I thought James Mangold did as good a job as he probably could have. Mm-hmm. He's not Steven Spielberg.
No.
There are moments where he tries to find little bits of business, particularly during a chase through Morocco, that feel Spielbergian.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the action, to me, was lacking in energy and inspiration the way that Spielberg just keeps upping the stakes and turning the screws and other cliches. So much of it is... The part of the big appeal of the Indiana Jones franchise is that it's like an analog franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of this movie was digital.
Yeah. I mean, that was a problem too with Crystal Skull.
Sure. That definitely.
I think that it improved the ways that Crystal Skull was bad. Dial of Destiny improves, but Dial of Destiny has unique problems to it that Crystal Skull didn't.
Okay.
So I think I said this to you. I might have said it to Rob.
Okay.
I think Dial of Destiny is a better movie than Crystal Skull. And I just rewatched Crystal Skull again not too long ago.
Yeah.
But I would rather rewatch Crystal Skull than Dial of Destiny.
Interesting.
Because Dial of Destiny feels heavier in its... So of its Disney, it's so of its 2023, it's so like bloated it doesn't have kind of the spryness that even Crystal Skull has.
Okay.
To your point, it makes you have to see a Indiana Jones movie not directed by Spielberg to really almost appreciate how great he is at staging action scenes.
Yes.
Like, I knew that going into it, but, like, it really made sense in this one. I think the movie takes a chance in the sense that we've never seen Indiana Jones in this place emotionally really before.
Mm-hmm.
I give them credit for that, but at the same time, it's kind of a bummer.
Right.
And right. I think it saps the movie or weirdly shoehorns in the things that are fun and humorous about the other movies where, like, there's humor with it. Like, the action beats are comedic, too, in certain ways.
Yes.
And this movie doesn't really have that. I didn't love the villains.
I mean, they're kind of generic. They're kind of generic.
I thought that there's a reveal I won't spoil about, like, kind of what happens over what happened in the span between Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny, which I thought was weirdly affecting in a way that I wasn't expecting because it had to do with people that I didn't necessarily have, like, a strong tie to from the previous movie. But it just was like, wow, what a tragic thing. And we've got his name up on the marquee at Lindergrund Cinema Rink. And we'll do that for as long as we need to. Maybe we should do a show on it. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, this felt like a soggy, like, maybe it's just because of the underwater scene, but, like, I felt like, I'm like, this is like Pirates 5. Like, they're indistinguishable from each other. And I like Harrison Ford. I mean, like, he's perfect. He knows what he's doing with these movies. So, like, I liked his performance. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is fine. She's doing Daisy Ridley. I mean, like, I don't know.
Kind of. I wish they had established a more specific dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah.
I like her a lot as an actor. And I think she's very pretty. But I was like, I don't totally understand what she's doing in this movie besides being a sidekick. And I tweeted this out as a joke. I don't remember the character's name.
Yeah, I know you're talking about the kid.
The kid. The movie really overestimates our investment in that fucking kid.
Yeah, it's to no fault of his own, but it's just it's tough.
Is there so much of this kid?
I don't know.
What are we doing?
Yeah, I didn't get that either. And he doesn't show up until like an hour into the movie,
right.
But then it's just like, hey, remember?
And then we're all in on the kid.
That's when I texted you the other day and you didn't reply.
I'm sorry.
Where I said, like, I hate in these legacy movies where, like, we show up and it's like, there's the characters we love. You got Marion, you got Indy and stuff like that. But then, like, arm in arm in the picture, it's just like the kid. And then this other new person, I'm just like, who are these assholes?
Right.
So I don't know. But that's not a problem just for Indiana Jones. It's that way with, like, a lot of legacy movies. I have a thing where, I mean, there's exceptions to everything, but I think that franchises should have a 10-year window because they need to be of its time. They need to be packed together before anybody kind of knows about the importance or the legacy or what we owe to the fans and stuff like that. Like, John Wick is 9 years, 4 movies.
Okay.
When John Wick 4 came out, we were never, like, hearing, like, this is what we owe the fans. But, like, when you have 40 years between Raiders of the Lost Ark and, like, it's too much to put on a movie.
Sure.
Like, you can't do, or Ghostbusters. It's like, you can't do that anymore. Like, there's no spryness that can be had with it because you're trying to just, like, appease everybody to begin with. It's, I don't know. Like, I just think it's such a waste of time to do these legacy movies.
Well, it's, this is what we're doing now. Yeah. It's just
and
nostalgia.
Maybe it'll end because, like, every movie to a movie, basically, this summer is failing.
Right.
And part of it, I think, that's hilarious about it is just, like, every time you see these, like, box office postmortems, it's just like, how much did that cost? It's, like, not even understandable anymore. I'm like, you guys realize, like, this has to make $900 million to turn a profit, right?
Right.
I'm like, what in your right mind thinks that, like, Indiana Jones 5 is going to make $900 million in 2023?
Because people love Indiana Jones. And
old people do.
Right.
We don't
There's
go to the movies
40 years
anymore.
Worth of history. Well, right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like not every movie can break $1 billion because there just aren't that many audience members to go around.
Yeah.
It bums me out that it's not a Spielberg movie because it's the last Indiana Jones movie, and yeah. it would have been nice for him to be the one to sort of send him off. Again, I think James Mangold is very respectful and tries to honor what Spielberg has done. I appreciated that it was, in some ways, ways that mattered, a sequel, and that it pays off certain things from before while being its own adventure. I didn't think the adventure was super interesting.
No.
Top Gun Maverick is like probably a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that this was more or less just a new Indiana Jones adventure and wasn't like callback, 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 reference, reference, callback, the way that Top Gun Maverick kind of is, or Ghostbusters Afterlife.
I can see that. I think
there's certainly fan service, but it's not like 2.5 hours of fucking fan service.
Right. Top Gun Maverick, though, I think because it's just the two movies, earns the we have kind of emotional baggage to uncover and like deal with. I think it kind of earns that.
Okay.
Even
when it's like, here's Danger Zone in the first 5 minutes.
Well, those are different. I mean, like, but I think like the emotional undercurrent of the movie,
okay.
I think that's why the movie works for the most part. But yeah, I think with Indiana Jones, like this is like created stuff.
Right.
Like here's the thing. And this has nothing to do with what happened in 5. It's just kind of like, when do you end your series? Like, obviously they should have ended at Last Crusade, but like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Like I'm not a huge fan of that movie, but like, I like where they left Indy at the end of 4.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. Well, that's a side thing, but like, I don't like when people are just like, oh God, Mutt almost put the hand on it. Blah. It's just like, yeah, but he takes it right away. Just saying like, no way, this isn't happening.
Right.
It's like a joke.
Right.
How do you not understand that? but it's the same thing as like Rambo 2008. It's like, finally he has peace.
Right.
Like, thank God this killing machine can finally like put down his gun and go talk to his dad. And then like Rambo Last Blood, like completely pulls the rug out from under that. And I think that Crystal Skull or Dial of Destiny does that too. And where we leave Indy and Marion is like not as satisfying by any stretch. And it's like kind of
Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. It's like something that they don't deserve really. Like,
right.
And, like, when you hear at the beginning of the movie, it's just like, oh, him and Marion are split up. I'm just like, is this fucking Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
What in God's name? Like, the best kind of love is the love that comes back to you. Like, you let it out into the world, and then it comes back to you decades later. It's like, those two motherfuckers are not divorcing. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, again, it tries to sort of rationalize it or justify it, but
yeah, they're just like, man, people love Rabbit Hole. Let's do that for them.
Sweet Rabbit Hole reference.
Oh, I got him.
we should probably talk about Open Range because we're at 48 minutes.
You're welcome.
Of what have you seen lately?
You're welcome, everybody.
The date? 2003. The movie? Open Range.
August 15th, 2003. In one theater, Freddy Krueger versus Jason Voorhees. Two titans going head-to-head for the first time. In theater 2, Open Range. Two titans going to head a second time. 8 years apart, the two Caseys, Kevin Costner and Kim Coates.
It's nice to see him come back
from
Waterworld.
Costner Coates!
So this movie is fascinating in that even in 2003, it felt like this modest kind of apology movie. I'm just trying to hit a double here, everyone.
Totally.
Because you've all turned on me because of The Postman, specifically Waterworld, you know, 3,000 Miles to Graceland, whatever. Like, movies.
I got the list.
Oh, okay, sweet.
Okay, so I consider it kind of the swoon after The Postman.
Yeah.
Because Waterworld dinged him.
Yeah.
But then he had Tin Cup, and you're just like, maybe he's got it back.
Baby!
But then The Postman was, like, apocalyptic in more ways than one for him.
And in large part because he directed it and sings on the song, and it's a big vanity project.
Which, by the way, I was listening. I watched the closing, the end credits for Open Range, and there is a song, and I was just like, Costner's got to sing on this. But he doesn't.
What the hell?
I'm just like, oh, he's real.
But we do see the tea set.
He is wounded.
Yeah, I wanted the tea set to talk. What an adventure we've been on, huh, guys?
It's like Mrs. Potts from Beauty and the Beast. She's just like, I never thought the Doc sister would marry Charlie Waite. And then the candlestick is just like,
ooh la la. Kim Coates got shot in the head.
It's like, let's make prairie beans for Boss Spearman and Charlie Waite.
Boss died for ingredients. I read that was his apology to Abraham Ben Ruby for cutting him out.
I thought that was great. Yeah.
The Postman?
Yeah, the Postman. Yeah.
And meanwhile, Abraham Ben Ruby's like, no, it's cool.
It's all like Diego Luna's character Button's concussion hallucination. Where he just sees Doc Barlow's cabinetry like coming to life.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good. So after The Postman, he did Message in a Bottle.
Bomb.
For Love of the Game.
Bomb.
Bomb. 13 Days, which was well-liked critically. It bombed. It was expensive, and it didn't do a lot of money. And, like, his performance, like, I think that movie is really good. His performance is a catastrophe in that movie.
I still have not seen it.
He's doing an Elmer Fudd voice to approximate, like, Chowda, and it's not work era. It's not working at all. And then he did 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Right. Big bomb.
Dragonfly.
Bomb.
And then he had Open Range, and then he had The Upside of Anger.
Okay, there's the comeback.
That's where he came back.
But it's such a weird, like, shuffling his feet on your doorstep comeback.
Yeah.
And they didn't even, like, really sell the fact that, like, hey, this is directed by Kevin Costner, the Academy Award-winning director of Dances with Wolves, doing another Western. Because it's like, yeah, we saw the last Western he made in 1997. It was a fucking catastrophe.
Yeah, and I mean, like, The Postman cost, like, a lot of money. I don't know if it was $100 million, but it was probably, like, $75 or something like that. And this one was, like, $22 million.
Right.
And he insisted on being second billed. And, yeah, I mean, like, you know, Costner is an actor with vanity. And in this one, he's not at all. I mean, like, he didn't write it, but he definitely produced this. And he's starring in it. He's directing it. But, it definitely feels like he's peeking a little bit, like, out of the ground. Right. He's like, is it okay for me to come out? Do you guys still like me? You guys like Westerns?
Yeah.
Remember Wyatt Earp? Yeah, that was another bomb.
No. Oh, you don't? The tide seems to have turned finally on Waterworld.
Yeah.
Like, according to my Twitter feed and according to, like, Arrow putting out, you know, 4K Blu-rays of Waterworld, like, people are finally accepting the fact that Waterworld is awesome.
Right.
Which I'm happy about.
I'm happy about that, too.
When will it turn on The Postman?
Never.
You don't think it'll ever turn on The Postman?
No. I mean,
when will we get a Postman stunt show?
Never.
At Universal Studios?
I'll say this. Like, I never thought that the tide would turn as much as it has on Batman and Robin.
Yeah, that's selling out shows at the New Beverly. But is that ironic?
Yeah, I think part of it. But I think people, not in mass, but, like, I think a lot of people probably watch that now and be like, I had fun. It's not good, but, like, I had fun.
Right.
I don't think you could watch The Postman unless you're you and me and be like, I had fun. It's like, what is this? I don't know. I kind of admire that The Postman happened, because without it, I don't think Open Range would happen.
For sure.
And so it's sort of nice, like, that it was what it was, because I think I haven't rewatched Dances with Wolves in a long time. I plan on doing it soon, but I think Open Range is probably just as good, or if not better, than Dances with Wolves. It's such a straightforward piece of the genre, and the thing that I love about it is something that he was saying, and I was reading some of the interviews that he was doing around the time of the movie's release, and he was saying he was focusing a lot on the pacing of the movie, and he said that, you know, it sort of wasn't in fashion to like take as long as you do at the beginning of Open Range in 2003 movies, of just spending time with the characters before like any inciting incident and things like that, because you really get to know this team,
right,
and their dynamic and kind of like the pecking order and like who does what and how they came together and everything like that. And Costner was like, he used an analogy of a first 100 pages of a book, and he's like, everybody who's ever liked a book and been defensive of it and recommended it to somebody has said, you know, it gets really, really good. Right, just get through the first 100 pages.
Right.
And that's what he was kind of trying to do with this one. But he said, like, in his back pocket, what he knew was, it's just like, you need those first 100 pages to care about what's going to happen and make it the page turner that it is for the second half. And I think that by the time we're having the amazing shootout and the climax of the movie, you care about everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't maybe like sympathize with everybody, of course, because there's some really shitty people in that town, but like
Michael Jeter.
Yeah. But like, even down to like henchman number 6 or 7, right, you're right. Just like, oh, you know, I get this person. Like, I love James Russo's moment where Annette Bening slaps him and says, like, you're a disgrace. And he goes, I know it. And he's like, that's just the way that it is. It's like, yeah, I could be good and like not have a job, or right, I could be like a shitty person, which I am, and it comes easy to me, and benefit off of it. So sure, okay, I'll try better my Cloud Atlas next life, but I'm not doing it now. So yeah, I mean, like, I think that just like kind of like the luxuriousness of that pacing, it's something that Costner's very prone to do,
mm-hmm.
even though this is like a short movie for him compared to his other works. Yeah,
it's like 220, but
yeah, right, but like it? His other ones are 3 hours. Right, right. I'm guessing Horizon will probably be like,
well, it's like 5 movies.
Yeah, 12 hours, and we'll do a show on every one of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, so
yeah, it's like a hangout Western until the shootout.
Yeah.
You're just hanging out with these characters and like listening to them talk to each other, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a 20-year-old movie now. I don't think there's a studio in business right now that would let him go as long as he does just setting up characters anymore.
Probably not. I think the only way that you do this is, I think what he did this time, which is pay for a lot of it himself.
Okay.
Because, like, M. Night Shyamalan is the example I always choose to use. And, you know, he gets to do whatever he wants, but that's because he pays for everything up front, and then he uses the money that he made off of the last movie, and he puts it into the new movie, mm-hmm. and then he's just like, okay, whoever wants to distribute it, have at it, but, like, it's pretty much my game.
Right.
So I think that's kind of what Costner has, you know, allowed himself to be able to do. So.
It's such an old-fashioned Western.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it in 2003 with Erica. She's not a big Western person, but she liked the movie. Mm-hmm. She hasn't rewatched it, you know, 6 times in the year since like I have. Yeah. But you can like Dances with Wolves without liking Westerns, because it has this very specific story about, you know, this white man entrenching himself with the indigenous people, and then it's The Last Samurai, it's Avatar, mm-hmm. it's you know, story, and it's a Kevin Costner vehicle.
Which I gotta say real quick, I kind of bristle at the white savior complaint.
Okay.
Because in a lot of these movies, in order to be a savior, you have to save, and the point of most of those movies is that they can't.
Sure.
And a lot of it has to do with, it seems like a weird regressive argument to me, also like an easy reflexive argument also regressive, because it's a person who is basically saying, like, my demographic, the thing I'm born into, doesn't make sense to me. And I want to extend myself and learn more and kind of be part of a different culture, which mm-hmm. is something that we should probably all be doing a little bit more.
Right.
And like, especially if it's genuine that they just love it and they find kind of kinship with people who are different than them. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what it's all about, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So some of that always just kind of rubs me the wrong way when people are just like, it's a stupid white savior right. movie. And I'm just like, did you watch it? Like, right. what are we doing? So I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. No, you're not wrong. I think you can like Dances with Wolves without loving Westerns. I think yeah. you can like The Postman if you're you and me and mm-hmm. you like weird projects and yeah. Kevin Costner vanity projects.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can love Open Range if you don't like Westerns.
I think this is a movie that can convert people who don't like Westerns.
Okay.
I think that it's accessible enough. I think it's kind of like a Tombstone where it's action oriented enough. Mm-hmm. I think the characters aren't. I think there's other Westerns, which I'll get into later because I'm going to do like better or worse than these 2000s Westerns.
Oh, nice.
But there's other Westerns of this time period where I'm just like, you have to really like Westerns.
Okay.
To like
okay.
Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada. Like,
okay.
There's no in on that. Like, if you're not already there, they're not extending a helping hand. But I think with Open Range, it's doled out in an accessible way. And, like, I say that because I think that, you know, like, I liked Westerns coming up in the 90s. Like, I didn't start getting into Westerns until Unforgiven or maybe Five-0 Goes West. but, like, and then, like, I like Tombstone and I liked a few other, I can't remember any other 90s Westerns right now, but, like.
Wyatt Earp. Quick and the Dead's
good.
Texas Rangers doesn't come out till the 2000s.
We'll get to that. but yeah, Open Range was one where I think it was the first time that I really like just kind of was like, oh, I really like Westerns. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of the thing that like unlocked it from just being like, you know, your dad passing something off to you right. to being like, oh, this is for me now.
Sure.
So I don't know. And one thing that I just really like about this movie, because it kind of ties into the Costner conversation that we were having before, is he's playing three different sides of a character, and I find it fascinating. And I think this movie is kind of like a Rosetta Stone to understanding the appeal of Kevin Costner movie star.
Okay.
Because the thing that's cool about Kevin Costner for me is he's got everything going for him in the sense that he could be the most likable movie star there is. He's a Boy Scout. He's got the attractiveness. He's cool. He's suave, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of a man of agency.
Mm-hmm.
He's not weak-willed or anything like that. Like he could come across as like, you know, the perfect movie star, but for some reason he wants to play assholes
right,
and like right, broken people.
Right.
And he wants to almost like if you go up to him and be like, man, I really like that movie. He'll like push you in the mud. Like, and there's something fascinating about this self-destructive element
okay.
to his movie star persona. And he hates signs, like in Hidden Figures, he knocks down a sign that says like, no, like, African Americans can use this bathroom, and he takes like a hammer to it. And then this, he shoots a sign about like no free grazers. He hates signs. And then also,
he also hates the movie Signs.
He does. And then in this one, I said like he's kind of playing three different people mm-hmm. because you see him sort of as like a disciple to Robert Duvall's character as a
right,
cowboy.
Right.
When he's with Annette Bening, he's basically a child. He like, and that's, we gotta totally get into that, but like he's basically like indecisive,
right,
shy,
right,
awkward,
right,
but then when it comes down to violence,
yeah,
he is John Wick. And he snaps into focus,
yeah,
and he is the exact person you want in that situation. And I love the detail that he used to be these guys,
right,
and he knows how all of them are going to behave in a fight by sizing them up. He knows, like, okay, Kim Code is the crazy one, and I have to kill him right away. And then the other ones are going to stand in shock, and then I can shoot three of them. And then these guys are going to want to run because they're just like cow punchers and stuff like that. Right. I just love that about his character because it's just so – it makes so much sense for this guy who's just all over the place. I think there's a couple of spots where Costner kind of has like some tics as a performer sometimes that I don't really love. Like there's two scenes that bug me where he's standing kind of in the foreground and then Robert Duvall's in the background and he's just like, don't stand behind me, boss.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like, God, that sounds like me in Second City. Like when I was doing a Vietnam play. Or like there's a scene where he's like going to shoot a guy who says like, I'm out. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to bother you. Like he's already wounded.
Yeah,
he's like, I'm out of the fight. Like I get it. I'm done.
Yeah.
And like Costner wants to finish him off. And then Duvall's just like, no, don't do it. We're not like them. Like we shoot out of defensiveness, but like, we're not murderers. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, step aside. And I'm just like, oh God, Kev, come on. So there's like a couple of those. Those are like a little 3,000 miles to Gracelandy where it's like go wombats. And I'm just like, I could do without that. But do you remember that scene?
No.
You don't remember the scene?
You said wombat and I thought of Phoebe Waller-Bridge and it made me happy.
There's a scene in 3,000 miles to Graceland where he gets pulled aside at a road.
Oh, now I totally remember.
And then he kidnaps like these college football fans,
yes.
And then he like steals their clothes and puts face paint on. He's like, go wombat!
I totally remember it now.
Dripping with flop sweat.
It was not great.
No. And crazily enough, even though Costner I think is really awesome in this, Robert Duvall is even better.
Robert Duvall is so good, and he's another, you mentioned Three Burials, and Tommy Lee Jones is probably one of those guys, and Robert Duvall is another one of these guys, like Sean Connery. They're just not my guys. I can like them in movies, but they're not usually a draw for me. And Robert Duvall is a guy who's not really a draw for me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in this movie, he's like a natural resource. He's like so authentic and good in this role. And I know Kevin Costner has said he would only make the movie if Robert Duvall agreed to play this part, which totally makes sense because who the hell else is going to do it as well as he does?
Sean Connery.
Maybe. As Bosch. Shay, I'm Bosch.
Shay.
You've got some of that dark chocolate?
So your name's
and the good
Shoe,
cigars.
Your name's Shoe Barlow. You're about the same age as Jade Angelo.
Speaking of which, in The Rock, when he has like the scene where he's like, Jade? And then like her friend goes like, no, I'm so-and-so. That's Jade over there. I always thought that was such a weird beat where I was just like, just get the fuck off screen.
Connery is not the reason I like The Rock.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of reasons to like The Rock, but I definitely like Connery in The Rock.
He's fun at times, but he's not. Yeah. He's no Nicolas Cage in that movie.
Do you like Harrison Ford more than Sean Connery? Because I know Ford isn't one of your guys either.
No, he's not, but I would say that, yes, I do, because I'm watching them side by side in
Side by side
in Last Crusade.
Let me introduce you to Chloe Ish.
Have you checked the asylum?
East meets West.
Watching them side by side in Last Crusade, I'm way more into Harrison Ford.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
It's like if a leather jacket were a man. Like a bomber jacket, though.
Way too much, like, silly humor in that movie. We're not going to talk about Last Crusade.
I like it.
I know. You like it more than I do. Yeah. It's my third favorite, which is not bad, you know. Like
there's so much in Temple of Doom I like. I just can't divorce the nostalgia I have for Last Crusade.
Totally.
But Raiders is always gonna be my number one.
Yeah. I mean, they're good movies, let's face it.
3 out of 5 ain't bad. Isn't that the name of that song?
I believe so.
Yeah, they updated
to talk about the Indiana Jones movies. R.I.P. Meatloaf. We need to talk about Annette Bening.
Yeah. We've got a lot of thoughts.
I think she's fine in this movie.
I like her in this more than I do in other stuff.
Okay.
Usually.
I mean, there's certain movies where she overcomes my resistance to her, mm-hmm. like The Grifters or even The American President.
Yeah, she's really good in that.
She is. And yet I still sometimes am like, but what if it was someone I loved?
Like, yeah.
What if it was Julia Roberts, you know, like, which isn't to say one's a better actor than the other or whatever. But like Julia Roberts is one of my people and Annette Bening isn't.
There's a weird like special feature on the Open Range DVD where her entire part's played by Hilary Swank and it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
It's weird. No, I don't know. I don't get it. But
I don't want to see Hilary Swank in a Western, though, because I saw The Frontiersman. Did you ever
Holmesman.
See that? Holmesman. Frontiersman. What the fuck am I talking about? The Holmesman.
No, I did watch it. Oof. I just don't remember any of it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
Yeah. I don't think Bening's the problem with that portion of the movie.
Agreed.
I think it stumbles to the finish line, and it's fucking ridiculous by the end of the movie because there's like three goodbye scenes.
And 20 minutes after the bad guys have been dispatched.
Yeah, it definitely isn't like a go out on a high note. Right. It's definitely like plod to the finish.
Yeah.
It feels very like epilogue-y, but it's like 20 minutes.
They need to have most of those conversations before the shootout.
Yeah.
And then after the shootout, he can do the proposal or whatever, you know? But like...
Yeah. It becomes unintentionally funny by the end. Because there's... And I said this on the Postman, the holiday show episode where we talked about the Postman. It becomes so funny that by the end of the movie, there's so much back and forth between the two of them where he's just like... I know that I'm a roughneck and stuff like that, but if you'll have me, and she's just like, okay, I'll have you. And he's like, I killed so many people. And then she's just like,
you don't want this.
Yeah. You don't want this. And she's just like, yeah, but they were probably all bad. He's like, not all of them were bad. And she's just like, well, you seem cool now. And he's just like, but I got darkness within me. And she's like, well, what do you want? Fine. I'll leave you alone. He's like, well, don't be rash. And it's just like, it's like that for three scenes. Yeah. And even at the end, like the final scene, I think they're married at that point. And
or about to be.
And she just goes, you're coming back, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, still? And the only thing that I can think of is even in 1882, women wanted a project. Like,
yeah, you might be right.
I don't know. It's just like, you know, it was either you or James Russo.
It is... a little weird because we spend those last 20 minutes suggesting that this whole movie has been about the romance between these two when no, it hasn't. But then the last shot acknowledges like, no, okay, it's actually about the friendship between these two.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the movie, I'm glad that it, well, I don't know if I'm glad. I don't think it hurts the movie. I like Duvall's character a lot, so like I'm happy that he gets to ride off into the sunset.
Right.
Movie makes a lot more sense if he does not live.
Interesting.
I think the movie makes a lot more sense if it's about the influence he has on Charlie.
Okay.
And that now it's up to Charlie.
Okay.
I think that makes a lot more sense. And he opens up Boss's saloon that he always wanted and stuff like
that.
Because and he's kind of settled down and made roots and things like that, which is what Boss recommended to him and stuff. And he's looking after Button and stuff like that. And like and he's kind of now the boss and Button is the Charlie and stuff like that. Like, I think that makes more sense as a story choice, but like, it's totally fine because Duvall and Costner like are so good together.
Yeah.
And I just, all their whole dynamic with like Diego Luna is like really good, and like Ben Ruby's really good. And I always thought, even like when he was on ER, that if I were an actor, I would want like the Abraham Ben Ruby career.
Okay.
Cause it's like you have to be on set for maybe like 5 days, but you get to meet everybody.
Right.
You're always in the thick of it with George Clooney or Kevin Costner or whatever. You get all the good stories. you get to like do 10 movies a year if you want, or shows and stuff like that, like the working actor thing.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Like, I'm just like, man, that would be so much fun. Like, if you had dinner with him when he was 55 years old, he's like, let me tell you about Open Range. Like, that's the career.
Right.
So, I don't know.
You get cut out of the postman.
Yeah.
Most of what you're saying in terms of like the influence that he has on Charlie, I think is still in the movie.
I think so too.
With the exception of like, okay, now it's up to Charlie.
Yeah.
That part of it is taken out because now they're going to be partners in the saloon as opposed to like, okay, he's on his own. But even the scene that you were talking about earlier where he was like, step aside, I'm going to shoot him. He's like, no, we're not murderers. That scene is very much about boss's influence on Charlie.
Yeah.
And which kind of man is he going to be, you know?
And that's a cool thing too, like their dynamic, because like you would think, you know, he's John Wick in the Wild Wild West.
Wicked Wild.
I should have just said Wild West. Fucked up. James West, Desperado, Rough Riders. No, you don't want none of this. Six Gun in this, Brother running this, Buffalo Soldier. And it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meets Jim West. Rough next, Bob, that, no, pride. Autumn is going. Anyways.
We're going straight.
Oh, we got Cisco up in here. She had dumps like a truck.
Oh, Cisco.
Yeah, that's what Charlie Barlow's like, or Charlie Wade is like. Two Barlow's got dumps like a truck. That's like what? Anyways, where was I? Wild Wild West. Oh, Kevin Costner, according to Western archetype, would be the manliest man there is in the movie.
Right.
He thinks that boss is the real man.
Right.
And I think that's a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, for sure.
And it also kind of goes into, like, he's almost like a disciple. Like,
right.
He's not just a mentor. Like, this is the right way to live.
Right.
This is the path to follow and stuff like that. I think that's really cool.
It's also kind of rare to see a cowboy movie that's about the work of cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't like necessarily thrilling or cinematic, but like we just throw that word around talking about anybody in a 10-gallon hat and like,
yeah,
we don't really know what it means to be a cowboy. There's been movies that are about this before. Obviously the John Wayne movie, The Cowboys, is a great example, but,
basically,
all that stuff
they just
is
walk the earth.
Yeah, exactly.
Like grazing from place to place, meeting right. people.
Right. What do you think of Michael Gambon as the villain?
Funny.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's totally fine.
He's
totally
fine in he's fine in like a Trump way where you're just like, he's pathetic and I hate him. But I think it's funny by the end. He's just like all shot up and he's just like, by the prairie and stuff like that.
Do you like when he's like, you're a stupid man, Mr. Burke?
I like when anyone says you're a stupid man, Mr. Burke. I'm a little bit, I didn't remember this going into watching it this time, that like Duvall shoots him like 6 times.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And he's still like, fuck you. I'm just like, I don't know about that. Like, he at that point he was shot like 4 times
right.
before that. He's just like, you suck, Spearman. Free grazers. I want to eat the grass, not your stupid cows. I'm Dumbledore. I removed 10 Dumbledore. Points from Free Grazers.
I love it.
Yeah.
And then Snape could be the guy that runs away. And then we see that guy just getting shot in the back later, right?
Yeah. I love the guy getting shot through the barn.
Oh, my God.
That is the best.
The guy that goes flying against. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. I remember seeing this in 2003 and thinking, like, A, I don't think I've ever heard louder gunshots in a movie.
L.A. Confidential is another one that I can think of where it's, like, that loud.
Okay. For me, it was Way of the Gun.
Okay.
It was super loud. But Open Range. And that, like, oh, that's one of the best shootouts I've ever seen.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I love how sloppy it is.
Exactly. That's what makes it so great.
There's two things I want to say. There's three things I want to say to that. So one is, I read it was a deliberate choice for Costner that he's just like, I want it to be real loud because people would get freaked out by that and scatter and things like that. Also, he wanted the dead people to be sitting in the, like, laying in the street after it was over because, like, there's collateral damage and right. an effect to this, and like you need to see that.
Yeah.
And like it's a messy bit of business. It's not just like they evaporate.
Right.
And then I love how there's that great, I hate the guy because he sucks and he did horrible things, but Mike Tyson.
Oh yeah.
There's a great quote that he said where it's like, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face for the first time. And that's what happens like in these right, in this right. gunfight where it's just like everybody like has a plan. But then like other than Charlie Waite, who knows these people, like they just act out of instincts and self-preservation
right.
and everything like that. And they scatter and it's like they're running between stacks of wood and stuff and hiding behind corners and things like that. It's so good.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing shootout again because of how messy it is, because of how improvisational it feels, even though it's not. It's all obviously very carefully orchestrated yeah. As a piece of filmmaking. I love that he does it all in like these long, wide shots, mm-hmm. low angles, where you can see everybody in the frame and sort of relation to one another.
Yeah.
Just handled really, really well.
And all the build up to it is great too. Like one of the best scenes of the movie is them going to the general store to make sure that they get a cigar
right.
and chocolate and
right.
just kind of spoil themselves before they probably will die.
Right,
and
exactly.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's great. And I love that he's like, I'm not going to go to my grave without knowing your real name. And then Duvall's name is Blue Bonnet. And then I love Costner's reaction to it. He's like, Blue Bonnet? It's like the choice of like what he emphasizes. It's like not a lot of actors would say it that way.
Right, right, right.
And he's just like, Blue Bonnet? Okay.
But then Duvall sells out Costner later on and tells Annette Bening his real name.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he say like, oh, well, his fucking name's Blue Bonnet? Like, okay. That's the point at which you tell your soon-to-be mm-hmm. wife.
Yeah.
Duvall's real name.
Mm-hmm. Lester Burnham is exactly. his real name. Yeah. I don't know why I remember that.
Avatar doesn't have memorable characters. No foothold. No footprint or foothold. Like American Beauty, where Adam remembers Lester Burnham.
That's a good Annette Bening performance.
Well, it's... I mean, it's she does the job. Because she's supposed to be annoying.
She's right for that kind of role. And, yeah. and I feel bad because she's not an actor that I instinctively like. And
yeah.
in American Beauty, I'm not supposed to like her. And yet when she, you know, collapses on the clothes at the end crying, it's like, oh, I feel sad for her for the mm-hmm. first time in this movie. It's harder in something like Open Range where I want to immediately like her.
Mm.
And I just feel like she's like the local school teacher who's like
she
2 seconds
is.
Away from scolding everyone.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of is. I mean, like, I think that it's... I don't know. All right, this is a weird autobiographical pause.
Woo-hoo.
All right. So I'm 41, and when I got to about 35, I kind of gave up wanting to get married at any point. Before that, I was all in.
Yeah.
After that, not so much. And part of it is I don't want the sad wedding where it's just like, finally he's getting married.
Oh.
And I know people won't think that, but
no.
I'll think that. And that's what it that's what will override it.
Okay.
And I feel like their romance is a little bit of like, well, they're the last two on the dance card. And it's like, I guess you're a guy and she's a girl. And
right.
And I think it's almost like sort of a romance out of desperation where they're each kind of more like, I'm going to give it my best effort than it's a real romance.
Yeah, I don't totally disagree, but I think the glass half full reading of it is more like, you know, I had given up on that as being a possibility.
Yeah.
And yet it literally rode into my life.
Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it.
I mean,
I'm too much
she
of a
kind
cynic
of,
when
yeah.
it comes to that, but like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
She kind of has a speech
yeah.
to that effect.
Yeah.
And I believe Kevin Costner's weird falling in love with her, like his...
Well, I think he's just such a stunted
exactly
person
right.
when it comes to that.
Right.
Like, I heard there was like a lot of the interviews and stuff like leading up to the movie were really interesting because Costner has like all of these kind of insights into like men post Civil War, like kind of, and that's what that Horizon series of movies is supposed to be, is like post Civil War, it's a settling in the West and like kind of that whole period.
Okay.
And I think that yeah, it's like he's this stunted adolescent who like never really like had a chance,
right,
to be a romantic and stuff like that. And like one of the insights that he had in those interviews that I'm glad that I remembered, that's where I was going, is he said that like there were stories that cowboys would ride like for hours just because one cowboy told another cowboy, it's like, there's a girl with red hair over there. And it's like, they would just ride up and be like, oh, she's picking flowers. And they'd be like way too shy to go talk to her or do anything. But it was like, that was good enough for them.
Okay.
And it was just kind of like, they're so
right
out of that, right, out of their depth in that realm. And I think Costner plays that really, really well.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think she also plays an understanding of that really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she kind of gets who he is pretty quickly.
Yeah, she has to, like, draw him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though he keeps saying, like, I'm a bad person, I've done bad things. And she's like, No, it's fine. That part I buy a little bit less. But her understanding of, like, his shyness and his just damage as a human being. And mm-hmm. he's devoted his life to just riding across the country and, you know,
yeah,
shepherding cows. I think she plays that well. She's good in the movie. I just have a little bit of an Annette Bening allergy.
Yeah, I'm closer to you than,
okay,
than that. My two things I always remember with Annette Bening is just like, and I don't think this is her fault. Maybe it is a little bit. Like, I feel like she's just so craven to win an Oscar that, like, I can't get past that. And then also, like, every time I hear somebody with that criticism, like, I remember Warren Beatty being like, God, what a great mother is she. So, like, or she is. And I'm just kind of like, oh, God, she wants an Oscar so bad, but I hear she's a great mom. And it's just like, that's the only two things I can keep in my head with, like, Annette Bening.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I have multiple personalities, apparently. So, I've got a lot of, like, little side tangents,
okay,
to go on, but the movie was nominated for Best Line of the Year at the Golden Schmoes Awards,
which you've schooled me on before, but I forgot were a thing.
It's defunct now.
Okay, thank goodness.
But the nominees,
yeah,
were Open Range, and the line was, "Men are going to get killed today, and I'm going to kill them."
Okay, good line.
I disagree with the best line in that movie because, okay, I would choose, "How about I hold your head underwater for just a little while?" I think that's so funny when he says that to Duvall. All right. Other nominees.
Yeah.
Kill Bill Volume 1, I'm Buck and I'm Here to Fuck.
No.
Terminator 3.
That's a line from a Toby Hooper movie. Robert Englund says that in Eaten Alive.
Yeah. Terminator 3, Talk to the Hand. A bit of a stretch.
Oh, that's maybe the worst moment in Terminator 3.
Not to the schmoes. Bruce Almighty, back to you, fuckers.
Nope. No good lines.
And the winner was Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. But why is the rum gone?
Open Range should have won.
Yeah. So
I really like Pirates of the Caribbean, but that's not a good
line. They're playing it in Marcus Orland Park for like a week in July.
Oh, for the anniversary.
Yeah, like 100. No, it's like a Disney series where it's like 100 years of Disney. And
oh,
they're playing,
okay,
like that, Toy Story, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and a few others. But like,
only Orland Park?
Yeah, like Cinemark is doing it, but like there's no close one doing that. And the only one I would be like, yeah, I'll get in the car and drive that way. Because I was going to rewatch Pirates anyway this year.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I would much rather do that in a theater than at home. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then, okay. Critics quotes from the newspaper ad. Okay, so.
I heard a radio ad for Dial of Destiny.
Do radio ads?
Yes, and it was like, bold, beautiful, and blazingly entertaining. And I just was like, fuck that person. And also, I disagree.
I read in Dan Geyer's review, he said it was breathlessly indifferent in the action sequences. And I'm like, That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I also wrote this note. This is a real kind of like one off, but I said Open Range could be part of the Easy Breezy collection.
Oh.
Maybe that's why we like it so
much.
Maybe. Poor Charlie Waite. okay, so Terry Lawson of Detroit Free Press, 4 stars. Mose Persico, Entertainment Spotlight. Magnificent, a sweeping epic to remember. You might like this one because it's one of your kin. Patrick Stoner.
Oh, sure.
PBS Flicks. Pitch Perfect. Oscar-level performances are given by Duvall, Benning, and Costner.
Is that the only way we can talk about movies? Is like their Oscar chances?
Even in 2003, the
apparently,
answer is yes.
Yeah.
Larry King. The best Western since Unforgiven. Clay Smith from Access Hollywood. A cinematic triumph. Kevin Costner's Open Range is the best Western I've seen since his Oscar-winning Dances with Wolves.
Okay.
He did not see Unforgiven.
I guess not. Would you say it's the best Western since Unforgiven? Since we're talking about it?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. Jim Ferguson, ABC TV. One of the year's very... Wait a minute. Oh, hold on. One of the year's very best. Kevin Costner has done it again. A must see. And then Tony Toscano from Talking Pictures gets the top one. A bold, compelling, and brilliant film. Costner successfully brings back the epic Western.
It's not an epic Western, though.
No. Well, he saw a different one.
It's a modest Western, which is part of its appeal.
This is true.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing I like. Okay, I was at the beginning of the movie, you know how there's like when Mose is missing and then Boss and Charlie have to ride into town and there's like a 1 minute transition of them just crossing the prairie and like going through the lake and stuff like that. It reminded me of whenever James Cameron has a movie coming out, one of the things I love the most about it is we get James Cameron interviews. And he gives his perspective on storytelling.
Okay.
And one of the things he said was, like, Disney would go to him and be like, could you cut down some of the flying around stuff? Like, it doesn't move the plot forward. It's not, like, it's slowing the pace down and stuff like that. And he's like, fuck you. I think they're cool. It looks cool. And if I think it looks cool, then people will think it looks cool. And I think that when I'm watching them crossing the terrain in the West, the Wild Wild West, if you will, I'm just like, yes, that's what I want to watch. Like, I want to see shit like that.
Right.
I don't want to see them, like, there right away.
Right, exactly.
I want to see an establishing shot of the bank and then they pan down on a crane. I don't want to do that. Fuck you. I want to see them ride horses. Let's see here. Kevin Costner, keeps an item from every movie that he makes.
He kept the dark chocolate.
He kept the bottle of chloroform, which is the most Kevin Costner thing I've ever heard.
Really,
and also kind of makes sense for why he made Mr. Brooks.
I don't hate Mr. Brooks.
I like it too. It's good. That could be a show.
I haven't seen it since the theater, but
yeah.
At the time I was like, I don't know, Mr. Brooks. It really was, going for it.
I was just like, this is trashy as hell. I like it. I'm like, Cook and Costner should do more movies together. Costner turned down the role of Bill in Kill Bill to do Open Range.
I think I knew that.
Yeah.
And that worked out for everybody, I think.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think he would have been an interesting Bill, but like what David Carradine did is perfect for that
And we
movie.
Got Open Range out of it.
Yep. Kevin Costner's band liked my tweet about this movie.
Nice.
On Twitter.
Nice.
Because he said, we just finished Horizon, the first movie. It's my favorite thing I've done since Dances with Wolves.
Uh-huh.
And I replied, I love Open Range.
Uh-huh.
And he liked it.
Nice.
And I was like, yes.
You've talked to Costner.
Sort of. and... Better or worse?
Oh, here we go.
I have 3 categories.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Better or worse than... Let me know which one you want to do first.
Any of them.
Okay, better... All right, I'm going to build to it.
Okay.
Better or worse than these August 2003 movies?
Ooh.
The Battle of Shaker Heights.
Better.
party monster.
We drove to like a faraway theater. It was only playing at one theater, Battle of Shaker Heights in Erica, and I drove to like a faraway theater to see it because we were such Project Greenlight fans.
I watched the whole Project Greenlight with my ex on that one. And
such a good season.
We got on our horses and we're like, 2-day ride. And then we rode to Battle of Shaker Heights.
I saw Stolen Summer in a theater, too.
I did not see Stolen Summer or Feast in the theater.
I didn't see Feast in the theater because it was only playing in, like, DeKalb.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Who needs it?
Feast is not that great.
No. Better or worse than
Party Monster, I've never seen.
Neither have I. Better or worse than Marcy X?
Better.
Than 13?
Better.
Grind.
That's the Adam Brody skateboarding movie
that
I held in my hand for too long at Half Price Books recently.
I thought about it too.
Snapcase. Yeah. I was like, it's still shrink wrapped and everything.
I'm like, it has Jackass alums. That was like a big thing in like
the same copy of
it. That was a thing like in the early 2000s. Like every movie I picked up, I'm like, it has Jackass alums.
Just like Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
It does, yeah. Chris Pontius is one of the Irish mob.
He sure is.
Yeah.
And he's in the strip club scene, right? That's kind of what I remember is him like in the audience cheering for the stripping.
Yeah.
It's better.
American Splendor.
I liked that movie a lot more the last time I watched it.
I need to rewatch it. I liked it when I saw it in 03, though.
I was like, kind of like, that was good, but I'll never watch it again. And then we rewatched it maybe when we were doing that podcast recap, like redoing our 2003 movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you put both of them in front of me, I'm watching Open Range.
Okay. Geely.
I like Geely. It's better than Geely.
Come on, Button. We're going to the Baywatch. We're going to the Baywatch, boss? Going to the Baywatch.
The fucking Baywatch.
I just watched Geely for the first time this year.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike it as much as most people do.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I think Sanctuary is a better movie, but Geely would be the perfect second movie on a double feature with Sanctuary.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I need
just
to
because
watch.
Of the dynamic of the romantic pairing.
Does anyone in Sanctuary say gobble gobble?
No.
Damn it.
No. It's actually got like good dialogue.
So it's nothing like Geely.
No.
Jennifer Lopez is really good in Geely.
Yeah, she is. I think Ben Affleck is doing kind of a brave performance at certain points in that movie.
Yeah, he's a little...
I think where it ends with their power dynamic.
Yeah.
Is something that a lot of male actors of his age and A-list status would never be caught dead doing.
Sure.
And I think the fact that he's allowing himself to do that is really commendable and interesting.
If you just took all the
Bartha stuff
out of it, you know, and like, or even just make him a character who is like maybe not the brightest, but doesn't have like special needs, like... It doesn't change the movie that much, and it's less offensive, and it's better.
Yeah. Yeah. My Boss's Daughter.
I saw that in a theater, too.
Wow.
At the time, I was like, this is one of the worst movies I've ever paid to see.
Isn't Michael Madsen in there?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think he wandered through in a coke-fueled rampage.
Yeah.
God, I remember nothing about that movie except how much I didn't like it. Open Range is better.
The Medallion.
Starring Jade Angelou?
Jade Angelou and Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
I watched that for Jackie Chan Day a couple of years ago. Maybe it was last year.
Okay.
It's one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time.
Really?
It's bad.
Oh, no.
And it commits one of the... It's so bad it made me stop writing a screenplay. Because during the pandemic, I was writing a screenplay.
Okay.
And I had like songs in mind.
Interesting.
And stuff. I don't know where I thought this was going, but like I just was like, if I was ever to do it, and there is a song that I love called Mobile by Avril Lavigne off her first album, and I was like, that's the song that would play over the end credits of my movie.
Right.
And then there's a scene at the fucking end of the Medallion where it's like the two of them are like running like the Flash because they're special effects.
Okay.
And it's playing over Mobile.
Oh.
And I'm just like, God damn it.
So that happened to me so many times because I used to always have all these ideas for movies. Yeah. And one of the first things I would do is like come up with all the songs that would be in the movie. And then I would go see a movie and it's like, ah, fuck, there's the song. Mm-hmm. In 1997, I like completed a screenplay and then saw Good Will Hunting and then like threw the screenplay away because I was like, that. I'll never be that good.
Yeah.
Damn it.
You are that good.
Oh, thanks.
The only thing I'll say, if I have any regret over your failed ascent to Hollywood, is that if the sliding doors changed,
right,
I could have been doing a podcast with Edward Norton all this time. And that would have been cool.
He would have had great stories about Frank Oz.
Just like Patrick Bromley, that weird Hulk.
Yeah,
that
right.
That one-off Hulk, Patrick Bromley.
I'm nothing but a one-off Hulk.
I'm like... He's so tied to the hip with Wes Anderson right now, that Patrick Bromley.
What's that movie he directed that I didn't love?
He did 2 days.
Not Keeping
two
the days Faith, the other one.
He did Down in the Valley.
He directed Down in the Valley?
Did he? He direct. Oh, he Motherless Brooklyn.
Motherless Brooklyn is the one I'm thinking of.
I was so excited for Motherless Brooklyn.
Weird.
Because I was just like, finally, we're going back to 99. I'm just like, he's going to... I'm like, this is the one.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, and Bruce Willis is going to care and stuff like that. And then I watched it. I was just like, it's not bad. I mean, it's not good, but it's not bad. It's kind of in the middle. All right. Open Range or Uptown Girls?
Open Range.
Is Uptown Girls worth watching?
I mean, anything with Brittany Murphy at this point is worth watching. Yeah. It's not good, but like Brittany Murphy.
Okay. I'm sorry for bringing this up. Jeepers Creepers 2.
Oh. Open Range is better.
Okay. I have a fun story about Jeepers Creepers 2 real quick. I saw that in theaters when I was in college.
Me too.
It was playing on two screens at the Showplace East 11. And my roommate and I went to see it. And it was like on one screen at 9 o'clock and on another screen at like 9:30. So we saw the 9:30 and we were the only two people in the theater. And we were like, let's go into the 9 o'clock and watch some of it. And then we see if there's anyone in that theater. And no one was in that theater.
Oh, my gosh.
So then, like, one of us went and watched the 9 o'clock. And then one of us watched the 9:30. And then after the 9 o'clock ended, my roommate walked into the 9:30. And he's just like, you'll never guess how this happened. It was fun.
I saw that the same day as American Wedding.
Which leads me to my next August. August 1st, 2003. Open Range
open
or American
range
Wedding?
Is better than American Wedding, a movie I do not like.
Open Range or Freddy versus Jason?
Open Range.
Open Range or Freaky Friday?
Never saw Freaky Friday.
Or lastly, Open Range or SWAT?
I do like SWAT.
SWAT could be a show.
But Open Range.
Okay. Better or worse than these Costner produced or directed movies?
Oh boy.
Open Range or The Bodyguard?
I haven't seen The Bodyguard since the theater.
Open Range is better than The Bodyguard. Okay. Bodyguard is fun, but it's not, like, good.
I need to rewatch it.
Open Range or Rapa Nui?
Open Range.
Open Range or Wyatt Earp?
Ooh.
This is pretty easy for me. I'll still go Open Range.
I know Open Range is better, but I'm like, oh, if you put them both in front of me, though, yeah. I'm really torn because I do like Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
I'll take Wyatt Earp over Tombstone, but I'll take Open Range over Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm. I love there's a scene in Wyatt Earp where he's like an alcoholic due to grief. And then like this guy who's like really nice, he's like, son, you don't need to be drinking like that. He's just like, no grief can be, you know, no relief from your grief can be found at the bottom of that bottle. And my memory is that Costner just like punches him out. He's like, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm just like, that's Costner. Open Range or Waterworld?
I think I like Waterworld better.
It's okay. I think I might be like a tie on those. Open Range or Message in a Bottle?
Never saw it.
Open Range or 13 Days?
Never saw it.
Open Range or Mr. Brooks?
Open Range.
Open Range or Swing Vote?
Open Range.
Open Range or Black or White?
Never saw it.
It's not good. Open Range or Dances with Wolves?
I haven't seen Dances with Wolves in many, many years, so I'm going to say Open Range, but I honestly don't know.
Open Range or The Postman.
Yeah, I love The Postman. Open Range is better.
And then finally, Open Range or these 2000s westerns.
Oh boy, okay. Oh. I hope I've seen a lot of these. I don't know if I have.
Open Range or All the Pretty Horses.
Open Range.
Open Range or Shanghai Noon.
I need to rewatch Shanghai Noon.
It's fun, but it's not Open Range.
I'll say Open Range.
Open Range or American Outlaws.
Open Range.
Open Range or Texas Rangers.
Open Range.
Open Range or Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron.
Never saw it.
Open Range. That made like $200 million.
Are you kidding me?
Like worldwide. But like still, it's a horse cartoon.
What the fuck? Stallion of the Cimarron? And people were like, yeah, one please.
Yeah. They're just like fucking four.
Let's take the whole family.
There's a BOGO? Eight. Give me eight.
They're already doing BOGOs for The Flash, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yikes.
Yay. It hasn't crossed $100 million yet.
For real?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
After, like, week three, they said it's, like, up to $99 million estimated.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's a bomb of all bombs. Except Fast X and Indiana Jones and Little Mermaid. There's a lot of them. Open Range or The Missing, which I need to rewatch this year.
The Missing is flawed.
Yeah, it's not that good.
Open Range.
Open Range or Hidalgo.
I never saw Hidalgo.
It's not good.
No.
It's something I wanted to be so good because it's like Viggo right after Return of the King, and it's Joe Johnston and it's a Western.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I remember in the trailer, there's just like, yeah, you won't see that in South Dakota. And then I was just like, I bet in South Dakota, they're like, woohoo!
I remember the trailer, they were playing this Avril Lavigne song.
Easy. Speaking of which.
Yeah.
I went to...
sweet, yeah.
I went to Rolling Stone Records and bought some stuff.
Okay.
So I'll show you what I bought. I bought Dick Tracy on DVD for $6.
Can't beat that.
I bought Dead Presidents on DVD for $5.
Non-anamorphic. Also, spoilers. This is next week's show.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Who's doing it?
Rosalie.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm jealous, Rosalie. When the Pawn, Fiona Apple.
Did you lose your copy?
Of course I did. I've been listening to it on Amazon Music
and
YouTube. It's
so inexpensive. $5.99.
So good. It's maybe controversial statement.
Okay.
Favorite album of all time.
Interesting.
It got me through a lot of bad times.
Well, that's awesome. I love that. I'm glad you have a copy of it again.
When I first had issues with depression when I was in high school, every day I was like, just weirdly, the things I found comforting were ironing, lifting weights, and listening to When the Pawn.
Fascinating.
Those are my triple crown.
Okay.
I got Judgment Night soundtrack.
God, yes. Amazing.
I got the second Avril Lavigne album, Under My Skin.
Is your song on that one?
No.
Okay.
That's on Let Go, but I have Let Go already.
I don't have any Avril Lavigne albums.
I discovered her. Did I ever tell you about this?
You discovered Avril Lavigne?
I did.
Okay.
So there was the McDonald's in Woodfield Mall.
Yeah. R.I.P.
My sister and I, we would sometimes go get lunch there when we were at the mall. And every time we would go in there, we would hear like a song and we'd be like, The Cardigans, Loveful, they're going to be big. And then I heard like Avril Lavigne, Complicated. I'm like, whoever this is going to be fucking huge.
Wow.
And then it broke. I think the only time it didn't work was we heard Crush by Jennifer Page. And I'm just like, this girl's going to go on forever. And it didn't happen. But Crush is a great song. And then last but not least, I got.
Nice.
Stankonia, Outkast, because good. I listened to that all the time my freshman year of college.
Nice.
Bombs Over Baghdad. Ha ha ha. We loved them hoes. So many frat parties.
Your Judgment Night soundtrack just reminded me that Kino Lorber just announced they're putting out Blown Away as a 4K.
Ooh.
I will not be upgrading.
Yeah.
But I feel like we need more Stephen Hopkins in 4K.
Yeah.
What would be your first 4K Hopkins if you could upgrade any of his movies?
I got a lot of controversial statements.
Ooh.
Well, to answer that, I think the first 4K Hopkins I would probably go with. Probably Predator 2.
Yeah, mine too.
I don't really like 4K.
Oh, okay.
I think it's too clean and too digital.
Okay.
So, like, I like watching my 2003 DVDs because I'm like, these look like film prints. Like, there's a certain point, like, Blu-ray's the quality enough that I want.
Sure.
and post that, like, I get why people like it, but it seems too demo-y for me. I just don't really like
interesting
that look. So
I watched Open Range on DVD because there is no Blu-ray.
I watched it on HD Amazon Prime.
Oh, all right. So, I should have watched it that way. Instead, I watched it.
I do have the
like
DVD
a film
of it.
Print.
Okay. Open Range or Home on the Range?
Open Range.
Open Range or Brokeback Mountain?
I would rather watch Open Range, even though Brokeback Mountain
is
a very good movie.
Is like maybe second best movie of 05, second or third?
Behind King Kong?
No, Four Brothers. It's like Four Brothers. It's like Four Brothers, Brokeback Mountain, and Munich are like my top three for that year.
All right. I have not revisited Brokeback Mountain in a long time,
yeah.
And the only reason I would pick Open Range over that is because Brokeback Mountain doesn't have, like, shootouts and shit. It would be weird if it did.
Yeah. And it's tough sometimes when, like, an actor you love gives a not great performance.
Okay.
And that's maybe one of the wonkiest Anne Hathaway performances.
I feel like I kind of remember that from the movie.
Like, they put her in, like, really bad wigs,
yeah,
and
yeah,
things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And I just love her, like, in most things. Okay. And that was, yeah, not good Hathaway.
Mm.
All right, Open Range or The Proposition?
Proposition is pretty awesome.
I need to see it again because I only saw it once at the Music Box and I just wasn't on its wavelength.
Yeah,
way.
I'm still going to go Open Range, but Proposition is, like, good.
Open Range or The Legend of Zorro?
Never saw it.
Open Range.
It had a mummy kid in it, and I was like, no thank you.
Yeah.
But it just got announced as a 4K.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Open Range or Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada?
Open Range.
Open Range or Seraphim Falls?
Never saw it.
Open Range or 310 to Yuma remake?
Really good movie.
It is a really good movie.
Shit. Open Range.
Open Range or The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford?
Assassination of Jesse James.
I'm on the fence if I count this as a Western. I could see it both ways. Open Range or No Country for Old Men?
Probably No Country for Old Men, but I'm kind of in the not really a Western category.
And then Open Range or Appaloosa?
I like Appaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
Open Range is better.
Who's the girl in Appaloosa?
Zellweger.
Oh, okay.
She just gets, like, called a slut a lot in that movie, is my memory. By Ed Harris.
He called me a slut,
who
too.
Directed it.
Yeah. He's like, you're a slut, Maverick. And he's just like, what? He's like, you're not a movie star and you're a slut. It's like, it's subtext. It's not text.
Once upon a time, I did an article about underrated New Line movies of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to do an underrated New Line movies of the 2000s.
Please do.
And that's when I watched Appaloosa for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to go on the list. But I would have to rewatch all 9 or 10 of those movies to redo that list and write that article.
Yeah. I only saw it on DVD like in 2010 or 2009 or whatever. But
it's good. It's solid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wish we had more Westerns.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a few come out every year and mm-hmm. I end up like putting them on my list just because I'm like, hey, I'm happy a Western's out. And even if they don't make my top 10, they make like my underrated list.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm sure The Old Way will be on my underrated list, even though it's like not great, you know,
okay.
But it's a Western and it has Nicolas Cage. So I'm in.
He's got another streaming movie coming out soon.
Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah.
Who else
is in that one?
RoboCop.
Kinnaman.
Yeah.
I saw the trailer. It looked good.
Does it? I haven't watched the trailer.
Yeah.
The
trailer looked good.
I'm going to watch it as
especially
soon
for like
as it
a
comes
Saban
out.
VOD type
right.
joint. I
right.
don't know if it's Saban, but like, yeah, for a VOD, I was like, this looks like pretty good for a. And then Travolta's got one coming out in August.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Star studded.
I'm excited because it's like him and Dorf back together. And
yeah.
I'm just like, I'm ready for this team. Like, just do like 11 of these, please.
Can I say something controversial about my beloved Cage?
Yeah.
I don't love his hairpiece.
In?
Like, in general.
In general?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
He seems to be, the still that I saw from Sympathy for the Devil and in, like, Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, like, he's wearing an obvious toupee, and I don't love it.
Can I say something controversial?
Of course.
The Looney Tunes kind of piss me off. Because I don't think they're funny. Like, they never make me laugh. So, like, whenever I hear, like, Cartoon Club, I'm just like, oh, what's, like, I check out on a uni. I can check out during the first Looney Tunes cartoon and then sit there like a stone for 2.5 hours. No, thank you.
I did want to go to that free thing at the Music Box where they're showing the Looney Tunes on 35.
Sounds like hell.
See, I enjoy the Looney Tunes. I don't necessarily think they're funny, but I find them comforting.
Yeah.
And I don't ever get to see cartoons on 35 millimeter, so mm-hmm. I was like, I would go to that, but it's while we're gone.
That's why I'm pissed that, like...
There's so much happening while we're gone in Chicago.
Yeah, like, I saw the kiddie matinees for the New Beverly this month, and it's like... I disagree. Like, I would love to see Lilo and Stitch on film, because that's a beautifully animated movie. I want to see Hook on film.
It's Frozen while we're there.
I want to see Frozen.
That shouldn't even be shown on film. Like,
yeah.
No part of that movie touched 35 millimeter film.
Mm-mm.
So why are we showing it on 35?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know. But I got my reservation in for Mission Impossible.
Nice.
I got my reservation in for early screening of Barbie.
Nice.
So I'm ready to go.
Your summer is set.
Summer set.
Summer thrills.
Summer set. Morgan Freeman in 7. I'm Will Somerset. David Mills.
You're a stupid man, Mr. Somerset.
David Mills? It's time for summer thrills. You're acting like your wife's head's in a box. Let's go see Barbie before the summer set.
Is Barbie going to be good?
All right. I'm going on a weird journey with Barbie and Oppenheimer.
I'm here for it.
Where at first I was very resistant to both, where I was just like, oh, God, I don't need another like Christopher Nolan like movie.
Right.
His movies haven't worked on me in a while. And then Barbie, I'm like, that looks like the Flintstones. And then like now as we're leading up to it, I couldn't be more excited about both of them.
Oh, great.
Like,
okay.
I think the new Oppenheimer trailer looks incredible.
I haven't seen it.
It like is way more about like this is the movie than like this is the atmosphere of the movie.
Got it.
And then Barbie, it's just like weirdly in a way that it doesn't happen very often. The promotional tour of like Margot Robbie dressing up in Barbie costumes and like going to like benefits and premieres and posing in front of Mission Impossible posters with Greta Gerwig and their ticket. It's like adorable.
Yeah.
And like, I just love, like, in a similar way where I'm kind of getting my fandom rejuvenated for Jennifer Lawrence right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm having the same thing with Margot Robbie because I kind of checked out on her a little bit because I was just like, the Brooklyn accent again? And, like, now I'm just kind of like, oh, Barbie seems more like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, sure. Like Sonny Chipper.
Right, right, right.
And I'm all in on that.
Yeah, I want Margot good things Robbie. For her and for Ryan Gosling.
I do too.
So I want. I know the movie is going to be a success. I just can't decide if I am excited for it.
Yeah, some are set, some are thrilled.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, go to fthismovie.com every day for some stuff. Follow us on Twitter for as long as that lasts. Follow us on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Reserve seating every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon.com/fthismovie for bonus content. That's it, right?
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah, this show was sponsored by Open Range Box Lunches. If you want prairie beans.
Dark chocolate.
Enter the promo code Moe's Diet for these ingredients. And it's farm to table.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.